On the 18th of April last year at the APIA conference, I delivered a speech and outlining some of the principles for development in the Kimberley. And the key one was the rational strategic planning approach for the Kimberley. I also spoke about the importance of climate change and the importance of accelerating gas exploration and development. Here today, with crude at around $150 a barrel and petrol around about $1.65 a litre and the Varanus gas explosion curtailing 30% of the state's gas supply, like George W. Bush, it would seem very easy to call for massive intensification of offshore drilling. But cooler heads must prevail. This is exactly the time to deliver a rational strategic planning approach to the inextricably linked energy and climate issues, and there are no quick fixes. There's an absolute necessity for intensive informed dialogue around such complex matters as climate change and major development proposals in environmentally and culturally sensitive places like the Kimberley and South Pilbara. It's only through real dialogue that we might find the best solutions, and so I do thank CEDA for giving us this opportunity to talk and debate them. The question that frames today's discussion, economic development of the Kimberley, a shared vision, I'd like to actually sort of turn it around and say sustainability in the Kimberley, creating a shared vision. Sustainability meaning that we holistically consider the social, environmental, economic and cultural considerations, and we emphasise that it's a dynamic process of creating a shared vision. The reality is this is an ongoing endeavour, and it's quite a complex one. The Kimberley is immensely culturally significant to its traditional owners and to the wider world. Its country, both land and sea, are finally being realised for what they are, unique. And it's pretty much as good as you can get as far as nature is concerned. Getting development right would mean, as a society, setting aside areas, just like we have protected Ningaloo, Kakadu and the Great Barrier Reef. A constraint to one industry might also be seen as a magnificent endowment to the planet. The challenges in the Kimberley are to find ways to explore how the cultural and natural heritage of the region can be protected, to identify pathways for responsible development, and how development can sustainably contribute to communities. By any measure of natural value, the Kimberley is outstanding. Coral atolls, extensive inshore coral reefs, most yet unsurveyed, breeding areas for rare turtles, whale calving nurseries, dugong, spectacular islands, free of weeds and feral animals, the list goes on. It simply is an incredible place, as Wayne says. It's his home. The more we learn, the more we impressed we are. And that's why WWF has been so focused on the region, both from Australia and also globally. From an ecological point of view, it stacks up against anywhere. Incredibly, it's the only place left in Australia yet to record the extinction of a mammal. We've invested heavily in the region and intend to be there for a long time. In February, we convened the largest workshop of its kind, where scientists, the Kimberley Land Council, tourism experts and industry experts spent 3 days mapping the natural values of the Kimberley and North Kimberley area. And I'd like to acknowledge Trevor Ward, a fellow West Australian who's with us today and who helped us conduct this workshop. Trevor is a member of WWF's National Scientific Advisory Committee and a highly regarded marine biologist. I'm sure that Trevor would be more than happy to tell you about the marine world up there, what we know and what we don't know. And I'd also like to mention the chair of our Scientific Advisory Committee, another West Australian, Dr. Andrew Burbridge, who's highly esteemed for his terrestrial work in the Kimberley. So we in WWF are well blessed with a couple of really good advisors, sort of a wet one and a dry one. There you go. Our hope for the Kimberleys is that the natural and cultural values are identified and protected. Protection could be through a range of mechanisms, and it might include some World Heritage listings, a network of marine protected areas, protected areas on land. Indigenous knowledge and management, such as through Indigenous protected areas, are pivotal in these endeavours. And healthy, resilient communities must be part of any long-term vision for the Kimberley. Central to the vision are the traditional owners of the Kimberley, Indigenous communities in the Kimberley today represent one of the world's oldest and most complex continuous living traditions. It is important to recognise that many Kimberley communities face serious social disadvantage and hunger for a better future. Whether large-scale resource development should be part of the answer is being hotly debated within the Kimberley and beyond. Whether or not LNG is ever processed in the Kimberley, serious investment is urgently needed to provide support for these communities. We've worked on the ground with the Aboriginal communities for some years to improve conservation outcomes. The KLC, working closely with WWF and other environmental groups, prepared a joint position statement which identifies the stringent conditions that would underpin any considerations of gas development. It talks of the importance of broad assessment of protecting natural and cultural values of the traditional owners being in a position to make informed decisions, that real economic benefits should be delivered. We're different types of organisations, and we don't always see eye to eye, but when we've worked together, we've always tried to work for the high ground, and a long way it will continue. Describing the overlapping natural and cultural values of the region is an important part of what we both want to do, and there's much work to be done. There are large gaps in the collective knowledge about the nature of the Kimberley. Once we better understand the values of the place, the next task is protect significant values in perpetuity, and this is no simple process. We must end overfishing, which has seen species of sharks disappear in some areas. We must reduce threats of changing fire patterns, which now see early burn-offs replaced by late-season infernos. We must reduce threats from introduced species like weeds, the cane toad, foxes, and cats. And believe it or not, there are some stupidly now wanting to introduce the savannah cat to Australia, a cat almost perfectly designed to kill in the Kimberley. Will we never learn? WWF is working to understand what climate change is likely to do in the Kimberleys, and we need to find a way to build the region's resilience so that we can better understand what changes are going to occur and what's already happening. Managing development and thinking carefully about how to determine which forms of activity might be appropriate or inappropriate in particular areas is one of the challenges before us now. Scientific research and conservation planning should happen before development proposals reach decision makers. Logically, national parks or their equivalent should be established before developments occur. That might always be difficult, might always be not possible to do, but no one wants to see a development approved in an area that in hindsight should have been protected. A precautionary stance therefore should be taken. That's not what's happening in the Kimberley. The cart is before the horse. No one knows which areas should be included and which ones should be excluded. Despite this, WWF has taken the sometimes controversial position of not opposing outright developments, but rather working with the different stakeholders to see what is possible, what could be done. However, this shouldn't be seen as an indication that we're not concerned about the potential negative impacts. We are concerned. About 2 years ago, we decided that we would ramp up our marine and coastal policy work and then highlight what is going on up there, both within Australia and indeed around the world. We saw that there was an opportunity to do things differently. We just happened to be at a particular place in time where I think, that, if you like, the planets are aligning, where the different stakeholders are looking forward and saying, there is another way. We can do it better with these developments. In the usual course of events, however, such a proposal would be referred to government agencies for environmental impact assessment. There'd be a statutory process. It would trigger a stakeholder comment. Each proposal would be assessed individually, just individually. There would be no requirement on anyone, let alone the decision makers, to assess the broad environmental and cultural values at a regional level. There would be a limited opportunity for a full range of options to be fully fleshed out, or for there to be some consideration of the cumulative impacts of development and how they might be measured. And that last point is critically important. It's the cumulative impacts that really matter. We need a project assessment system that not only assesses impacts of individual projects, but determines what the impacts of all likely projects in a particular region are projected to be. This is the approach that WWF and others advocate globally. It is the approach espoused by the World Bank and through leading financiers by way of the Equator Principles, of which you're very familiar. It's a common sense principle, though not a trivial exercise. And yet there really is no alternative way forward. The region between Karratha and Darwin would logically encompass the scope of such an assessment. And the assessment would need to consider protected areas in this region and the potential of what we might need to do against changes in both mining, pastoralism, climate change, oil and gas. It's not just an oil and gas decision about one hub once and then we get back to normal. We have a possibility of looking forward in a very, very different way. And it was with this conceptual framework in mind that we observed the mounting proposals around the Kimberley and the strong bidding for offshore acreage, and we embarked on an intensive advocacy campaign. We work in lots of different ways. Some of it is advocacy and highlighting to the world that the Kimberley is important. And sometimes it's working behind the scenes. And in fact, we do more of that rather than in front of the scenes. We believed it was very, very important to look at a comprehensive way forward. And we believed that was important for everyone. Without it, we would all be flying blind. We very much welcomed the creation of the Northern Development Task Force and have been working through the task force various committees. And also welcome the announcement of the joint state-federal strategic assessment through Ministers Garrett and Ripper. In the interest of transparency and to help provide more certainty to proponents who take seriously their external environments, we want to make it very, very clear early on that we believed it was self-evident that some areas of the Kimberley are clearly off-limits. And at the APA talk I mentioned earlier in April of last year, we indicated that we thought that Scott Reef was one of those areas. Determining which other areas also needed to be fully protected from large-scale development needed to come out of a regional assessment, strategically thought through. Our position on gas developments is that if it can be shown that new gas infrastructure cannot be constructed appropriately in existing industrialised areas between Karratha and Darwin, these separate projects must be co-located in the hub, and this will help limit the impacts, although not eliminate them totally, to one area. However, this should only occur if a suitable location can be found. We know that proponents are driven by different agendas, but we call on all players to think about the legacy they create by their conduct over the next few months. Supporting a hub development in an appropriate location is very important. Narrowing the search prematurely will surely miss the point of taking a rational strategic planning approach, and certainly not allow time for the free, informed and prior consent of traditional owners. Organisations like Woodside and some of its joint venture partners have made a real effort to engage with us and other conservation and tourism organisations, and I thank them for that. Perhaps whole new ways of engagement will be created from these efforts. I hope so, and WWF will work towards that end. The challenge is now to extend these efforts to the work that only government can coordinate with perspective across a range of projects and sectors and with a full range of public good considerations, social, environmental, economic and cultural. But government cannot do this alone, and the cooperation of the gas industry and APA, as well as tourism, fishing and other interests, is crucial. There is enormous pressure for decisions about development to be made soon, and WWF is determined that these should be guided by scientific conservation planning and strategic assessment, alongside Aboriginal traditional knowledge and rigorous open debate. We all want certainty, but cool heads must prevail. Thank you.